Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the High Hopes Podcast. High Hopes. On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP. The crowd was singing high hopes, smiling through a broken nose. Oh, high hopes, high hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Welcome, man. It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. It's Seltzer's week off, so unless the Phillies make a trade, I assume, Tucker, that he is just sleeping the entire week.
He was at a fish concert yesterday, he told me and Elliot, that he was out in a field somewhere in Maryland getting ready to see fish. So,
as most 45-year-olds do, you know.
Listen, when fish goes on tour, you got to follow him around. That's how it goes.
I guess so. So, obviously, High Hopes Podcast presented by Miller Lite. Jack Fritz, Tucker Bagley hanging out on this Monday morning as we react to a pretty disheartening start to the second half. I think it's more disheartening, Tucker, because of what they have ahead of them. You know, it goes Dodgers, Yankees, Marlins, and then there's Orioles, and then four against the Nats, if I have that correctly. So this schedule is certainly toughening up a little bit as we are, 15 days in the trade deadline? It's getting tight, and Tucker, it's going to be a bit of a bumpy ride until August 3rd.
Yeah, certainly not the way you want to start. And you mentioned, like, your schedule gets a lot harder. This was supposed to be a easy way to ease into the second half of the schedule, and the Mets haven't won a series at Citizens Bank Park since 2002, since the summer of 2002. So that kind of shows.
Wait. What do you mean? They won a series at
Citizens Bank Park. They haven't won a series at Citizens Bank Park. Take away the 2024 postseason, obviously. Although they split there, I guess, but they haven't won a series at Citizens Bank Park since the summer of 22.
Oh, you said 2002.
I was 22. 2022.
I was like, that feels impossible. And listen, you are a stat head.
But that explains your reaction, because I thought it's not that crazy. It's only 4 years ago. I can't believe he's that shocked by that. Way to really sell it. But now I get why you felt that way.
Yeah, I was like, holy cow. Yeah, so they've been won a series there since 22. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. And you kind of felt it coming. I mean, Thursday was annoying. Nola pitched really well. Mattingly, I thought, extended him a little bit. It really doesn't feel like I think Donnie Baseball has done a really, really solid job since taking over. Obviously, the record speaks for itself. I do think there's a buy-in. I think there's a belief. I like the gravitas we talked about a lot on this podcast. The one thing that we need to watch with Don Mattingly is the bullpen decisions. Because it does feel like, Tucker, once a game, it is, well, that doesn't feel right. And I know he's not exactly picking from the best stable out there. It's not like there's a bunch of horses. He can just say, hey, go give me a shutdown inning when I need it. But his bullpen decisions, I would say, the last month have felt really off.
Yeah, and they're just, like you said, they don't have a lot back there outside of Duran. You don't really have a lot of guys who are throwing shutdown innings. But, yeah, I mean, go back to Thursday night with Nola and the decision to keep him out there maybe one inning too long. And it just, the things that we worried about with Don Mattingly when they promoted him to interim manager, and the things that we saw when he was the manager in Miami, when he was the manager with the Dodgers, he's kind of doing all the same stuff again, right? It's just they're winning enough that those warts and those issues have kind of been glossed over.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of threw us off the scent early where he was pulling guys a little early. He had plenty of relievers up and ready to go. So, you know, the transition was normal. It was there. And then, again, like this last little month, overall, he's done a bang-up job. I would give him probably an A for for turning this thing around and having them move in the right direction. But when it comes, like, and maybe he just has a Nola problem. Like, maybe he just can't figure out what's the day where I leave him in and what's the day where I yank him. And to be fair, I kind of feel him. I kind of understand him on that one, where it's like, I don't know when to get him out either. But and I guess he's thinking, hey, we need a quick sixth inning. He's got 7, 8, 9 coming up. Let's see if we can just steal an inning. But obviously, it did not. It's not progress. So that was Thursday. Whatever. It's fine. A couple big things off the weekend, as we, you know, kind of break this whole thing down. The thing that obviously jumps out, Tucker, is the whole fifth starter situation. I mean, they've lost 10 straight?
10 in a row. I actually went through yesterday morning and saw and went through every box score from the previous 9. It's not great. It's not a great look when you look and kind of add up the 10 straight losses.
Well, and they're scoring, what, 1.9 runs per game during that time?
So look at their runs. It's 1-1-3-0-4-1-2-1-5.
Oh.
And then they get shut out yesterday. They scored one. So one more yesterday.
How could you forget the Boehm home run off of future Philly AJ Minter? I mean,
I was really locked in by that point of the game.
Yeah. It was one of those games yesterday where, I mean, yesterday was for as hot and hazy as the last couple of days have been. Yesterday was a nice little reprieve from all of that. And I listened to the first inning on the radio, second inning on the radio. It was 5-0. I get back home. Nolan McLean's throwing frisbees at like 3,300 RPM on that slider or whatever to Harper.
Second highest spin rate of the year across baseball.
Nice. And then he's throwing that little Greg Maddux level two seamer at 96 mm-hmm. miles an hour. And there are games where you watch them and it is, oh, they have no chance today, or they're not really into this one.
You know early with this team. They're very good at making sure by like the third inning, you know, if you're in it or not.
They're very good at being like, hey, you don't have to watch today. You go enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I think that happens with older teams, Tucker.
They should have Bob McClure in the dugout now, waving the white towel. Just do it early. Just put it up, and then we can move on. Move on with your Sunday.
My one theory is that I think why they suck so much in day games is they're an older team, so they have a little bit of a late night, and it's tougher to bounce back than that the next day. I know they played at 4, but this team has been so bad on. I would love for you to look up their record on Sundays this year, because
I know the record on day games is atrocious.
The record
across day games is pretty terrible.
And Sundays, it feels like they never win on Sundays. It does. I mean, the Pirate series and the Tiger series, those are the two distinct Sunday wins that I can.
Did it feel like to you on Thursday when they lost that game? Like, no, they're losing this series.
Oh yeah,
no way. They're taking both games over the weekend.
That's why Saturday was such a must win. It reached must win territory when you have, you know, Zeus on the mound in that spot, and you have Ron Hell versus McLean. As soon as they said, "Hey, we're gonna push back, Sanchez and Wheeler so that they don't face the Mets because we need them for the Dodgers," it was like, well, then you're going to lose 2-3 because God forbid you could try to do something smart and it totally backfires like it usually does for this team. But yes, they are horrendous on Sundays. They're horrendous in day games, and they let you know pretty early, hey, you don't have to worry about this one today. Now, I will say it felt like we were trending towards a Stubbsy performance yesterday, Tucker, but
yeah, I really do appreciate them locking in after the third inning and keeping him fresh for the upcoming Dodger series.
Yeah, we didn't need to see Stubbsy out there. Overall, like I think there's a big freak out today because, you know, everything's so reactionary all the time. I would never react strongly to things. Always, mm-mm. always
not
measured,
here.
Always measured and well thought out. But I do think that there is a smidge of an overreaction to Alan Ronhell today. It's not. He's never going to be a world beater. He's a fifth starter. He's been serviceable, and he got hit around yesterday. Like, that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah, and like he almost got out of the first. He got 2 quick outs, kind of gave up a weak hit, and then it unraveled, and you know, then you were kind of done from there. But I mean, if I told you he gave up 5 runs in 4 innings, you would hope that, I mean, obviously going against Nolan McLean isn't an ideal matchup, but that isn't horrible. It's not like, you know, when Sanchez gave up 11 or 12 in three innings and you were kind of so far behind the eight ball, you couldn't figure it out. I mean, you can score five or six runs. The team did it the day before on Saturday. So that's not asking the world of your offense. I think the issue is right now, maybe more with this team than just the fifth starter, which is annoying. And the fact that the losses have piled up so much to the point where it is this noticeable. To me, I think the biggest issue is your offense right now is two people. Like your starting lineup, you have Turner, who's really heated up the last two, 3 weeks. Schwarber still playing like himself.
Yeah.
And then the other two guys who you've counted on the whole year in Bryce Harper and Brandon Marsh are both hitting under 150 for the month of July. Bryce Harper hasn't hit a home run in 21 days. It's been 3 weeks since he hit a home run. Like, that's an issue. That's worrisome. Brandon Marsh looks like the guy who, you know, was borderline unplayable at the beginning of last year. He's hitting 140. I think he has like 120 strikeouts to only 20 walks this year. Like, neither one of them were putting together competitive at bats right now. And as a result, a lineup that already wasn't really that deep, you're down to two guys, the first two guys in your lineup. And after that, it's kind of nothing.
Yeah. After that, you're kind of just hoping that one guy can do one thing that day. I wouldn't say that you're relying on Stott or relying on Bohm or relying on JT. And then you get to the Rincones and Crawford. Crawford's been fine, although didn't have like a strong weekend. The Harper thing is like, you wonder, I wonder if the heavy bat maybe wore him down a little bit.
Tired.
He hasn't hit a home run off of a lefty since April 21st. If you look at his numbers against lefties, I think he has a 655 OPS this year, whereas in his career, he's like an 830 OPS guy against left-handed pitching. Like, he is totally cratered from that standpoint. And the at-bats, like, are not, and it's not like he's, right now he's not hitting righties or lefties, but, and you're starting to see him do that thing where his butt is like flying towards the first base dugout, which means like that's when he's offline. So it kind of reminds me of how he looked at the beginning of the year, this first like week and a half where he was horrendous. And then, you know, started getting on balance, started getting his timing back. He's had a couple of these struggles throughout the year. It was the beginning of the season. And then it was that right around that Brewers series. I think he was like 1 for 31. And then now he is going back through one of those.
It's kind of weird. I looked it up before the pod because, I mean, he's always been a streaky hitter, but this year it's felt even more so, to where he looks like the hottest hitter on the planet for a series, then looks like the worst hitter in the world for, you know, a week or two. Like, his OPS got over 900 middle of April. It was down to 840 by the end of April. Got to 950 by the middle of May. It was down to 830 by the end of May. It was, I think, 925 or 930 by the end of June. He's back down to 850. Like, there's been no in between with him. There's really been no consistency. And what worries me now is, like, there were times, I think his last offer, he was at least hitting the ball hard. He was getting some walks. He was hitting the ball hard, just hitting it to bad luck around the time they went to Citi Field. You know, he was hitting the ball hard, just wasn't, you know, finding space in the outfield. He's not putting together good at bats. He's not hitting the ball well. He's grounding out weakly to the right side of the field. He just looks lost up there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and even some of the expected stats that I was holding my hat on are starting to go down a little bit. The batting average is now 277 after it was like holding in the 290s. He's still 97th percentile in expected WOBA, which is good. But I agree with you. It hasn't looked like, when he was making outs in that portion where he was struggling, where I think it was like 1 for 31. It was loud contact. Just
like when they went to Toronto and Milwaukee. I thought he had like four or five plate appearances where I was like, man, like that should have been a double. That should have been a home run. He just hit into really bad luck. Don't feel like that now.
No. Now, the nice part is this is also natural during a baseball season. You know, like the ebbs and flows of it. The Marsh thing, I feel like Marsh is so interesting because, well, it might be your fault. Ever since, have you looked at the numbers since you said he should get a 5-year, $100 million deal?
Yeah, actually, I tweeted it yesterday morning. He's hitting 146. He's like, I think it's worse now. I think he's like 4 for 52.
Nice.
With a 450 OPS. Nice. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Before yesterday's game, he's hitting 146 with a 435 OPS since June 29th.
Well, and I think he has, I think his OPS in his last 13 games is in threes because he's only hit six singles and that's it. So, no, but I think, I think you always have this fear with Marsh that, like, when's the other shoe going to drop? I don't think there's this total trust that he is what he's been the first half of the season. I hope he is. I love Brandon Marsh. Like, I don't want him to go back into, like, turn into a pumpkin here in a way. But I think, and not, I feel like we're just doing dueling stats at the same time. I was looking this stuff up this morning as well because there's no seltzer. And I think in his last 25 games, he's hitting 222, or maybe 35 games, he's hitting 225. And it's like, that's also not it's not the biggest sample size, but it's also not 10 games of lack of production. So the scary part is you felt like you had three really good hitters in the lineup in Marsh, Schwarber, and Harper, and you were just waiting for Turner to come along and join the party. And now it's like Turner's joined the party, which we'll get to, and the other two are not there. And then Schwarber's just so weird because he'll pop a home run and everything's fine. But like the overall, I haven't felt like it's felt more home run or strikeouty than it has in a little bit. So, I mean, the offense is just in a precarious spot.
Yeah, and that's why you can have games like Saturday where, you know, if you get a couple big hits from JT or something, everything kind of clicks into place. It's just you don't have the depth for that to happen. And what's funny with Marsh is when they had the national game on Thursday, they kept talking about how he isn't taking as much anymore. He's being a lot more aggressive at the plate. And it actually makes sense. Like, you look at his on-base percentage, it's .330 right now. Whereas if you go back to 2023, which is his best year here, it was over .380. Like, he was walking a ton. His batting average was 40 points lower, but his on-base percentage was 40 points higher than it is now. As a result, like, he has 20 walks and 100 strikeouts this year. So he's not walking. He's not really taking a lot of pitches. He's not grinding at bats. And as a result, when the balls aren't falling in, where he's not getting these, you know, kind of soft contact hits, he's not really doing much of the plate because he's not really helping you out if he's not getting hits.
Yeah. I mean, Ty Cobb's probably resting easy now with maybe the BABIP thing is starting to cool off a
little. Him and Rogers Hornsby probably hanging out, yes. Doing all right.
Like,
thank God.
The dang BABIP. We had him the whole time.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. So Marsh situation is one to monitor. The Harper situation, one to monitor. The numbers off lefties are concerning for Harper because you do watch him against lefties and it feels so uncompetitive. Cause you can tell when he's going bad, when he starts trying to bunt and he just like, let me just see if this will trick him a little bit. I think he does that when he can't see. So whenever he starts bunting, that's when you know that things are going.
He hasn't shut down yet, like he did against Hobie Milner. We haven't seen that yet.
I know, where the computer program just...
Controller disconnect.
He unplugged the plate. We have mentioned it a couple times, but Trey certainly is starting to look the part at the plate.
Offensively.
Yeah, I mean, defensively is just... It might be time. We might have to have the conversation after the year. It's not going to happen during the season. Like, you can yell into your blue in the face to put him in the outfield now. Like, do it right now. They're not going to do it. It's almost pointless. You have to kind of accept it. But this offseason, I mean, I don't know what he did last year to have the both eye test and analytics suggest that he was one of the better defenders at shortstop in the game. And then to whatever this, I mean, this is as bad as 23-24. It feels worse. I mean, he's back to booting the routine balls, which is just horrendous. If it's not center field, it's got to be left field. But he's got to get out of there.
Yeah, it's like you said. It's not like, man, he's really close on these crazy plays. He's making a diving stop. Like, no. It's just routine ball, like right at him, and he's just missing him, or he's throwing way over Harper's head. I mean, he just looks lost out there. I don't know if it's like a confidence thing now, where he's just completely lost and he's second guessing everything.
Yeah,
I've never really loved Trey Turner's baseball instincts at shortstop. I kind of thought he was more of an athlete than a real ball player. And I think going into the outfield and letting him just fly around out there and make catches would probably fit his skill set a little better. But like, you're not going to do it right now. It's not like Edmundo Sosa is lighting the world on fire and think, man, if we put him at short, move Turner to left, that's really going to deepen our lineup. And we can kind of present it that way, because you are putting Sosa out in left sometimes. And his OPS plus right now is like 65. He's been pretty abysmal. But yeah, I mean, I just don't know what you do with him defensively this year. Because even like, if you go into next year, I think you have to probably tell him at the end of this season, before he goes in the offseason, hey, get an outfield glove, start working out in center field, because you know what's going to happen, right? Like, we get to spring training, it's going to be like him and Bobby Dickerson are working on some stuff. He's going to go back to the backhand all the time now. Yeah. He's really figured it out. Watch out. It's going to be like 2025 all over again. And then
Bo was out there with him.
Probably not.
The Boa and Dickerson combinations getting Trey back to 25 form. I would love to be a fly on the wall for the end of season meeting when they sit Trey down and Dombo goes under his desk and he pulls out a nice outfield glove. That's here. Go learn center field, pal. We'll see you in February. I guess, you know, it has reached the point with these star players on the team where it's almost like you have to believe it to see it, as Tucker just loses his headphones. You have to almost believe it to see it, with like Harper will hit second and he'll actually move to the outfield if they go and trade for a first baseman for half a year or a year and a half. And then with Trey, it's like, we just did it. He's got to play center field. He's got to play left field. I guess I'll just believe it when I see it, that Trey is actually just going to be off of shortstop, because part of the contract and part of being a star and, you know, the promises that I'm sure were made. I hope that they're going to move him off shortstop. But again, it feels like the Stars run this team in a way, and I'll almost believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I mean, they're a top heavy roster, and as a result, the top half and the top portion of their lineup gets preferential treatment, right? That's like why Real Muto gets to play 5 or 6 days a week. Now, there's not a lot of guys behind him who you would trust, but yeah, that's why he gets the leash he does. That's why Harper gets the leash he does. That's why Turner gets the leash he does, is they're getting paid a lot of money. And even though they have a manager who's played the game and maybe commands a little more respect than the previous guy in that role, I don't think they're really excited to have tough conversations with those guys.
No, I would be surprised if there was a tough conversation now. And I do think that Trey is someone, at least it's perceived to me, is like such a psycho worker that I think he almost psychs himself out. And that's probably, like you mentioned, what's happening defensively. I think early in the season, maybe the offensive struggles were carrying over to defense. But I also wonder if he sees a ground ball right at him and he's like, he's in his head saying, bleep, 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 bleep.
It sure looks that way.
It does, dude. That one on Thursday where he's coming in and he's got to make, like, that is, it's just such an easy play. Like,
that's not like a high school player should make.
Yeah.
Like that, that's as routine as it gets.
He does not have shortstop instincts. He never has, but whatever. They have to make do. At least he's starting to hit. And the one thing that I noticed, and I wonder if you saw the same, is I feel like he was looking more closed off at the plate. And like, I wonder if he's trying to stay closed off because sometimes he fires his hips and this causes him to be all over the place. And maybe that it hurts like the barrel accuracy. But I think that maybe if he's more closed off, he's not swinging at those pitches that are outside the zone. Like now he did chase a big old sweeper. What was it, 2 days or? Oh, against Christian Scott. So maybe this is just the last two games that I noticed it. But I feel like I've seen a more concerted effort for him to be more closed off so that he can maybe get to balls. I don't know, but
yeah, I mean, I have noticed his high leg kick hasn't been as pronounced in recent weeks. You know, he has looked more close off. He's definitely using more of the field. He looks a little bit more like the guy last year who was fine just like, I'll take three singles a game to the opposite field and we'll figure things out after that. And I mean, you look at his OPS, I really think the turning point for him was that hit he had against the Nationals with two outs in the top of the ninth, where he kind of started that huge rally and that comeback. He has an 880 OPS since that at bat, since he got that hit. I mean, nice. You talk about a guy who maybe has some confidence issues. I mean, having a huge hit in that spot that really kickstarted that rally and really made a difference for this team and probably set up the signature win of the year. I do think that confidence has really carried over in recent at bats.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a, I would like to see the closed stands come back to baseball. I used to love like Edgar Renteria, and now everyone is just wide open all the time. McGonagall might have saved it. McGonagall is closed off. It makes it hard to pitch him in because he can be quick to the baseball from that standpoint. And maybe Trey saw McGonagall hit and was like, you know what? I'm going to try that.
I
think Trey's a big tinkerer. So, you know, maybe try.
Him and Harper both. I've never seen a star player tinker more than Bryce Harper.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. No batting gloves. Now, I will say, I feel like he used to have more swings. Like, remember when he first got here, there's some times where he just keep the bat right here and he wouldn't do the thing.
Sometimes he like wouldn't stride. Like,
yes.
I've never seen someone who, as great as he is at what he does, just constantly change things.
Oh, all the time. All the time.
Even now, like we mentioned, like him trying to bunt when he's like, I've never seen someone who's undisputably great look so like confounding sometimes.
Yeah. Is me saying he's getting tired from the heavy bat an excuse?
Wouldn't surprise me that that's the case.
Well, I'm trying not to say,
do you think he messed up his approach getting ready for the home run derby? Are we ready for that conversation yet?
That's the big fear with the new rules. They used to mess up these swings all the time. So now I'm thankfully we had two guys in the home run derby. That's what's so tough about it. It's like they had to do it. It was awesome. It was great. Good for the sport. But I hope it doesn't come back to bite them. I really, really hope.
Is that going to be the highlight of the season?
I hope not. But like I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, it is going to be, it's going to be a tough, what are we, again, are we 13 days away from the trade deadline? 14 days away from the trade deadline?
I think it's 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't move it off that Monday, right?
Yeah, so it's 14 days. Yeah, we did not move the trade deadline.
We didn't get the trade deadline moved. It's still on Monday.
Yeah, believe it or not. So it's going to be a bumpy little ride into the trade deadline. And maybe they can make a trade before. Like it does seem like the trades are happening earlier this year. I mean, the McCullers trade just happened. And like Devers last year was more of a, like they got rid of
that. Devers was more of a unique situation. That was more about Rafael Devers than it was the Giants and Red Sox.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe they can get something done before that. But with the holes that they have and the, you know, needing a bat, probably maybe needing a starting pitcher, I don't know. Noah has looked like he's kind of turned a corner. It does alleviate the need, I guess, a little bit. But then, you know, the Alan Rangel thing happened.
I guess the question would be, like, are you worried about them missing the postseason? Right, because like the fifth starter in my mind, like if you already have them earmarked for a wild card spot, whether that's 1, 2, or 3, you're not going to need the fifth starter, right? Like you're not going to need someone to replace Alan. Like as of right now, Ron Hell's not getting any innings in the postseason, right? So if you think that the way they're constructed, they're going to be able to hold their wild card spot, maybe make a run at the division, but at the very least hold a spot in the wild card playing in October, I think the fifth starter's probably your lowest priority.
Yeah, I think it's gotten to that point. And everyone says, go get a swing guy, a guy that can be a starter and reliever. It's like, okay, well, then you end up with Michael Lorenzen.
Yeah, and I don't want to say bad things about Michael Lorenzen. I mean, that no-hitter was unbelievable, but he was a complete non-factor for that team.
Not at all. Now, the guy they should have signed in the offseason was Nick Martinez, who can do both in a pretty high-level way, but nevertheless, he went to the Rays. Like, so I guess it'd be fine if they went and got like a Brady Singer or whatever, like someone who could take the ball every fifth day. And, you know, I think his ERA is like 5 this year. Of course, against the Phillies, he looked like a Cy Young candidate, but
former first round pick.
For the most part, he is a fine number 5 and someone that can get you through the rest of the year. And then there's the other factor, which we haven't talked about, which it seems like Alex McFarland's coming up today, which is another example of bullying working. You know, just yelling to your blue in the face about why is he just sitting in Reading? How much Are you going to go trade him for a stud bat, a 25-year-old reliever? Like that's our big plan instead of seeing if maybe he can help them at the big league level. What a crazy concept the Phillies are employing here. So hopefully he's coming up, but Tucker, seems like Alex McFarland might be fine. Well, I know he got called up for the day against the Braves earlier in the season where it was they're down arms. They needed to add someone.
Right.
But it seems like we're actually going to get the Alex McFarland experience.
Yeah, it is interesting timing because, you know, you had talked about for a while that they're probably keeping him in Double A, maybe just as trade bait. And now that he's up and, you know, presumably here to earn a spot in the bullpen and maybe work his way into high leverage spots because you just don't have that many guys right now. I do find it really interesting that the timing now just feels weird to me. Like the trade deadline is 2 weeks away. You kept this guy in Double A the entire time. He hasn't gotten a chance to pitch using Major League Baseball's in Major League or Triple A. Like, it just feels like a half measure. It feels like you didn't know what to do with him. You're between two distinct plans of either we're going to call him up and we're going to try and give him every opportunity to succeed. Or we're going to keep him down. We're going to keep his trade value where it is. And hopefully he's going to be used to bring in someone who can help us this year. And instead he kind of did neither. Instead you kept him down too long. You're bringing him up now. I hope he succeeds. He certainly has 2 months to kind of figure things out before the postseason, but I don't know. It's just weird that all of a sudden it was like, we're kind of abandoning what we were doing the first 3 months. We're going to do this now.
It's a little haphazard. It's 100% a little haphazard. And maybe they saw Seth Johnson for the sixth time this year. And they were like, you know what?
Why a little too not? Much Seth Johnson this year.
Too much Seth Johnson in like roles Seth Johnson should not be in. Like a three-run game, two-run game, one-run game where you're trying to scratch and claw your way back in it. It's like here comes the.
You know, he's only thrown 14 innings this year.
It feels like it's 40.
It feels like 40.
Yeah, that's the longest 14 innings of my life. He is watching Seth Johnson, who always looks scared. Like, have you ever seen Seth Johnson when he's on the mound look intimidating?
No, I've never seen a less confident man in my life.
He looks terrible. It's like when you see Kirkering sometimes. And you just look at the face and you're like, it's one of
those
days.
Didn't have it tonight. Yep.
It's one of those days. I don't like those Kirkering days. But then Seth Johnson, first off, he always looks like he just saw a ghost, which I don't like at all in my, you know, killer reliever. But it's and not to make it all. First off, the fact that he wears 51 bothers me. You're not Randy Johnson.
You don't like Johnson 51 on the back of the jersey?
No, I don't. And it's the yanking of the fastball for me. It's really just his fastball command that sends me up a wall. It's like, how do you sit 99 to 100 and you have no idea where it's going? I mean, if you could know where the ball was going one time, you could probably be a pretty good reliever. But I am just, I'm so over the Seth Johnson experience. I'm sure he's a good kid. I'm sure he's got a good family. I can't do it. I don't want him out there. Now, of course, we're going to do all this and it's going to be like McFarland for Lazar or Shugart. But I hope he's coming up. I don't want people to think, because this is what always happens, right? And this is why prospect discourse, like, generally is toxic in a way and I don't know how beneficial it is, to be honest, but it's also awesome. I love prospect talk. You would think that they have Mason Miller sitting in Double A. Like, they don't have Mason Miller, Joan Duran sitting there, like, just waiting to come up. Now, he has premium stuff. He's upped his velocity. He's up to 102. He hit 101 the other night. It's like a heavy, heavy, heavy sinker that I think is hard to square up and make good hard contact on, and then it's a real sweeper. Sometimes he leaves it up a little bit. I'm a little worried about that. He leaves the sweeper up, but he does have he has not always been the best command guy, which, you know, that's why he's a reliever and not a starter. So it's premium stuff. He's had a good year. What I find dumb is, again, like you mentioned, how haphazard this is. You could have given him to AAA a month ago and just seen how it would go. And then if he shoves there, we bring him up to the major leagues. To just go from we're trading him, we're keeping him down there to bang, you're in the big leagues. Good luck, kid, from double A with the different baseballs. Again, like we just talked about, feels a little crazy. Hope it works.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the hope would be he has great stuff. There obviously isn't really a book on him yet because he's just getting called up. He's going to make his major league debut within the next couple days. I don't know. Maybe he can just catch the league by surprise. He can be efficient enough that for the next 2 months he can get people out just because they haven't seen him yet. And then you take it from there. But I mean, this is a guy who had an ERA of like 6.5 at Reading last year. It's not exactly at, you know, the age of 25. So not really a huge top prospect, not a blue chip guy coming in.
Now, I think that was his first full year back from TJ. And they also, for some reason, they tried to make him a start. Well, they tried to make him a starter to trade him. They've been trying to trade Alex McFarland for like 2 to 3 years. So when they drafted him, they made him a starting pitcher, which you look at him, he's always been a stone reliever. And then
he was a reliever in college, right? In Miami?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But they in Reading last year, I think that they started him for the first, I don't know, 4 months of the year. In the last 2 months or month, they made him a reliever, and that's when he started to show signs of life. So I think a lot of that had to do with starting last year versus relieving. So last, like, I guess, thing off the weekend before we get into the quick minor league minute, and then I did force Tucker to do a Tucker's bag because he can with all his stats.
I got some good ones.
Good. Lizardo was really good again. He wasn't great. Like, his command was off a little bit. Like, that's why 90 pitches in 5 innings. He sometimes he gets into that mode where he's like chasing strikeouts a little bit, and I don't think he's always the most efficient. I don't think he was very efficient on Saturday. But in the last 12 games, they are 11-1 in Lizardo starts with a and he has a 2.01 ERA. All of a sudden, his ERA is down to 3.43, even with some of the big blow-up starts he's had. That 2.01 in his last 12 starts is with that White Sox game where he allowed 5 runs. So he has been great for a good stretch of the season. And it almost feels like it's not being talked about because of what Sanchez and Wheeler has done. I mean, Lizardo has matched them besides the few blow-up starts that he's had.
Did you know he's the only Major League Baseball player born in Peru?
Nice.
Fun
nice.
Fact for you.
That's a fun fact.
But yeah, I mean, you see what he's done in his last 12 starts. And when we talk about the Phillies being a contender and making the postseason, possibly going deep, that's where it starts, right? It's the fact that Wheeler looks like himself. Sanchez is, you know, kind of tired out a little bit, but is still pitching at an unbelievable level. And you have Lizardo, who pitched really well in the postseason a year ago against the Dodgers, has looked like a Cy Young candidate again the last month and a half, 2 months. Those three guys, I mean, there isn't a better 1-2-3 at the top of anybody's rotation across baseball. And when you get into shorter series like the wild card, like the NLDS, that's really all you need. I mean, you look at what the Phillies did in 2022 when they made all the way to the NLCS. Wheeler, Sanchez, or Suarez and Nola, they started 6 of their first 8 games. Like they were able to really keep the top of the rotation going to the mound every game.
Yeah. I mean, having those three will give you a chance in any short series, and you just have to hope that the offense can do enough. I think what Lizardo did in the postseason really did impress me. Like, there was a level up to him. There's a chip on that shoulder that I liked, and I guess we can start filing Lizardo away as another Caleb Goffin masterclass. I mean, another guy that comes here, talent stuff, you see it, premium stuff, but the Phillies are able to unlock a different level to him. And Caleb Goffin continues to be one of the most valuable assets for this team, a team that has a lot of money invested on the offense. And now with the contracts has invested a lot on the pitching side as well. But the way he has been able to get more out of these guys is really, really, it's really impressive.
And the fact that he stayed healthy.
That's what the last 2 years. I was going to bring that up. It's a big old knock on wood. Like, find all the wood. That's going to knock on wood. And just, you know, we're putting it out to the internet. So obviously, if things go wrong here, people are going to blame us. But the Phillies have done a really good job with pitching specifically of keeping these guys healthy. I mean, the Wheeler thing last year was not pitching arm related. And no. Then, you know, Sanchez has stayed healthy. Ranger always had little things, but I think that's kind of Ranger. Nola had the ankle and then turned into the side.
And thing. Then, yeah. He
whatever.
Didn't he break a rib, like sneezing?
Yes. But they've been pretty remarkable with their ability to keep these pitchers healthy. And it's the only way they've won the last couple of years is by having a great starting staff.
Especially with how much they've asked of them, right? Like, it's not like they're really babying him. Like, they're going deep into games or making them throw 85, 90, 100 pitches every time out, partially because their bullpen isn't as deep as you would like. Like, they have to go 6 or 7 most nights to put them in a position to win.
Yeah, that's why their staff war is always as high as it is, because they usually pitch deep into games. They get a lot of strikeouts, and they're really, really good. And hopefully they can be really good for 4 weeks in October, and we have a parade down Broad Street. All right, quick little minor league minute. I cannot stop thinking about Gage Wood last night in Reading. He was incredible, and he allowed a home run. It was in the second inning, and it was the inning started off with a BS, like, Rincon and the center fielder didn't communicate on it, so it fell in. And then the home run, it was a Reading home run, where it was a wall scraper, like barely got over.
Total bandbox there in Reading.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, who could forget that Darren Ruff and Dylan Cousins?
Those Hoskins and Cousins.
Ruff did have a monster year there as well. And of course, you know,
at the age of like 28.
Yes, Babe Ruff. And then obviously Howard is the king of Reading. But Gage last night pitched like a guy who started the Futures game and wanted to get back to Citizens Bank Park as fast as possible. He struck out 9 and 4 innings. He didn't walk anyone. And the fastball was like right in that 97 range, which I thought was ticking up a little bit. Last couple starts, I feel like it's been 95, 96. He leveled up last night. I don't know what they're going to do. I have an idea of, like, I wish they would put him in the bullpen. Like, we've talked about that. I think he could be a leverage arm for this team tomorrow. Obviously, his secondaries aren't perfect yet, but I think the slider's interesting and the changeup's interesting. It's just that fastball, it takes off like an airplane. Like, it's a jet airplane watching that thing go through the strike zone. And it's totally different than Painter's. Like, Painter's was getting crushed at AAA last year and ended up getting crushed at the major league level. I know he threw 97, 98, but Gage's has that rise to it that you look for in fastballs.
Like, we talking fastball shape?
Yeah, always. That is a pitch he could eat with at the big league level tomorrow. I think they're going to have a really tough time keeping him out, because I think he wants it. I think he's gunning for it. He does not look like he's slowing down at all. I really hope that on August 3rd, it does not come down that they trade him, because even if he ends up being a reliever, I just think that he has the mentality. I think he has the toughness, and I think that he is built for the city, and he's got a unicorn fastball. He was incredible last night.
Yeah, I guess the thought would be, what's his role in 2026, and then how does that affect his future as well, right? Because the elephant in the room is the supposed innings cap, right? Like, he's already thrown quite a few. Is he at 50 innings, 60 innings?
I think he's at 59.
59, and he's probably going to finish around 100. So you don't really have a ton left if you're to bring him up. I don't think he's the fifth starter.
No.
Because that really knocks him out by the postseason. So he's probably coming in as a bullpen piece. And does that stunt his growth moving forward? Probably not. Like, people have done it where you bring in a young guy, put him in high leverage spots, and then spring training next year, move him back to the rotation and see how it goes. But I think the other thing, it would add a lot of excitement for a team that maybe doesn't have a lot of young pieces really excel. Like, Crawford's been fine, but, you know, Painter kind of flamed out. There isn't a lot of young excitement the fan base can kind of point to and look towards the future with. He would be that. Like, if he got called up tomorrow, I think fans would be pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with him and starting is he's pitched into the fifth once this year. He's thrown five innings once, so it's not like he's giving you a ton of length down there. So it would be more in a bullpen role. And then, of course, when you talk about the bullpen, it's like, is he pitching two out of every 3 days? You're still managing him out there. You obviously don't really want him pitching back-to-backs yet. But also at the same time, like, he seems like a bulldog. Like, it seems like if you just said, hey, go throw, he'll take the ball. I think he always wants to take the ball.
And even if he doesn't have starter length, like, having a guy back there who could go two or three innings is such a weapon.
Yeah, shut teams down in the middle of the game, you know?
Who is he, Andrew Miller? 2016 Andrew Miller?
Come on, man. I can't believe how long ago 2016 is now. It's 10 years. I want to go watch and listen to the Theo pod because they're doing like the lovable reunion. Mm-hmm. Those guys are just 10 years older. It's crazy. And like Chris Bryant's not playing anymore. I thought he was the best player on that team. But yeah, 10 years flies by. It's when I graduated college. All right. Gage, amazing. Cade Obermueller, amazing. A nice little bounce back start from him. He went four innings, did not allow a run. And it looks like his fastball velocity is ticking up a little bit. He does seem like someone who could be, if they don't want to trade Marquez and they don't want to trade Gage Wood, I think Obermueller could be the one. And maybe that's why he's still in Clearwater. He got off to a slow start because he had mono. But he's starting to kind of figure it out now. But maybe they're keeping him in Clearwater to juice the numbers. Although I think, like, if I was doing that, Jersey Shore is a death park to pitch in. So I don't know. But I would be, again, hesitant to trade Obermueller. But I think he's got reliever risk, but he was really good. Juan Parra down on the DSL. Francisco Renteria is the future star. Juan Parra is a really, really solid little shortstop prospect for him. His OPS now over 900. He had a 770 on base percentage this week down there, which is awesome. The pitching in the DSL, man, is crazy. Sometimes you look at the box scores, and it's like the Phillies DSL wins 16-11. It feels like I keep taking the unders, but they just keep going over. And then Francisco Renteria had a home run and a triple this week. I was trying to start look up like Julio Rodriguez and what he did in the DSL, and we're tracking in a very, very good way with Francisco Renteria, who is all of a sudden very, very important. Brian Rincon had a really, really strong week. I think he hit two home runs. He seems like a trade guy. He's had a really solid year offensively. Like, he's ticked into I think that defensively he's always been MLB quality almost since he was drafted. And now the offense is starting to match the bat. So, you know, maybe he get, like, of all the prospects they have down there, I think Rincon is someone who would have value to other teams. And I don't know where his future is here. Like, they would have to be making a pretty big bet on him if they were going to move off Stott. Like, it's just a big bet that they seem scared to make. You know, I think they like what they have. You know, that's why Bohm's been here for two years after trying to trade him. I think they're kind of fearful sometimes of shaking things up. So they usually just trade their guys. So Rincon does feel like he's trending that direction. So it makes it easier to trade him when you have Juan Parra. And then you have Juan Villavicencio, who he had a crazy week for Clearwater. I think he hit three home runs. And he looks like he's employing the strategy of just swinging as hard as I can and hope that I make contact, which
works sometimes.
That's how the Nats have, like, broken out offensively this year. The Pirates, how they've broken out offensively this year, is the Blue Jays last year, their whole thing is, you're going to strike out, but we're going to swing hard. And if we make contact, it's going to be for slug, not just little slap hits. And that's what I see when I watch him play. So he's a shortstop. Parr's a shortstop. Starting to come through the system. Spangler, obviously. So there's a nice little crop of middle infield prospects that are starting to develop for this team. Although I do think Rincon will probably get traded. But obviously we'll see on that. That is the Minor League Minute. Tucker, what's in the bag today?
We got four things, I think, in the bag.
All right.
First, 55 wins through 100 games this year. Third straight season they've done that.
Nice.
Second time in franchise history they've had three straight years with 55 wins in their first 100 games.
Nice.
75-78, they did it as well, which is pretty crazy for a team that was consistently a contender for half a decade.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, until they get a World Series,
doesn't matter.
This run will be viewed as a missed opportunity, but hopefully they can get that done and we don't have to worry about that.
First half, Duran had 24 saves, obviously one blown save, 1.38 ERA, 50 strikeouts in 32 innings, and a .918 whip. Mm-hmm. Compare that to 2008 Brad Lidge, who had 20 saves, a 1.13 ERA, and then he had 50 strikeouts in 40 innings and a 1.125 whip. So obviously you have the one blown save, but Duran's been better.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a stat out there that Duran has already surpassed Lidge's one run save opportunities from that year.
Yeah.
Because it feels like he always comes in a one run game.
I mean, the Phillies have the best record in one run games, mainly because of him.
Yeah. Whereas Lidge usually protecting a 3-run lead. I think it's 12 versus, I think Lidge had 12 one run saves in 08, and I think Duran already has like 14. So he is pitching his way into certainly getting an extension here and being here for a long time.
Would you give him or Marsh an extension?
We're back. Duran. I always said Duran.
Then a couple All-Star things to clean up from last week. So I kind of thought, I think I said to you when we were sitting there at the All-Star game, Phillies don't play well in the All-Star game. Never have.
Nice.
Since 2006, the Phillies as a whole, 9-47 in the All-Star game with two doubles, a home run, and two RBIs.
Who was the home run? Do you know?
Romuto. I think Romuto hit one in Colorado a couple years ago.
I remember that. I remember that now. Yeah, it checks out. I mean, the pitching did it mostly fine besides Sanchez, but never at the plate.
And just never in general. I had a feeling they never hit well in the All-Star game. When I finally saw it in front of me, it was pretty insane for a team that has quite a few All-Stars.
I mean, the biggest All-Star moment for this team is probably Lidge blowing it in 08.
Or Kyle Schwarber winning a swing off that just doesn't exist in the history books.
Yes.
Had to be there.
He had to be there. I was camping that week, so I didn't miss the entire Schwarber All-Star game thing. I'll probably be back doing that next year.
Yeah. I mean, there's no need to. It's at Wrigley next year. Who cares?
Oh, what a garbage park.
And then finally, on the flip side, pitching wise, Sanchez gave up 3 runs, obviously, in the first inning. First Phillies pitcher to allow a run in the All-Star game since Cliff Lee in 2013.
Oh, wow.
First one to allow multiple runs since Curt Schilling in 1999.
Nice. So hitting hasn't shown up.
Nope.
Pitching for the most part.
Fantastic
job. Yeah.
So when Dave Roberts wants to win next year, maybe put Wheeler on the team. Let Bryce stay home.
And don't let Sanchez start the game. Sanchez start the game.
This is what we were saying all week. Let anybody but Sanchez start the game.
That was the plan. That was the plan all along. Don't give the crowd pop. Don't let them have a...
No. Don't let the crowd get hot early.
No, you can't do it. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. I'll be on the final out. Oh, so actually, I think Seltzer and I are going to do a final out tomorrow. We're going down to the Dodgers game.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So we'll... I think we'll be live down there. And yes, on vacation, he is gracing us with his presence.
Wow.
For the pod. So obviously if there's a trade, we'll be back, but Tucker will join the show again on Thursday. So looking forward to that. Enjoy the Dodger series.
Two out of three.
Ah!
You got your horses going.
Yeah. Come on, man. And they're not facing Murderer's Row. Now Sasaki will throw 7 shutout against them because of course he will. I think he had 16 100 mile an hour pitches the other day. So,
did he?
Yeah.
He gave up like 4 runs because no one and everyone can hit him but us.
So, looking forward to that. And then the Yankees coming down over the weekend. So, for Tucker Bagley and Jack Fritz, this has been another edition of the High Hopes Podcast.